People will validate us when we are the person that they want us to be. People don't validate us when we are being ourselves. That's something only we can do for ourselves.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creators, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. Twice a week, we will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Joel Schroeder.
Unconventional Life, welcome to the show. This is Joel Schroeder, your host, tuning in from Playa del Carmen, Mexico. I've got JP Sears in the house, but it's California. JP, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
Jules, I'm ready to slide down the path less traveled with everybody else. Hopefully there's not too much gravel on it, but I guess that's not for us to say, but we're going to find out.
I love it. JP, I'm super stoked to have you on the show. And for those of you that are not familiar with JP Sears or are familiar with him, he is an emotional healing coach, YouTuber, author, international teacher, speaker, world traveler, curious student of life. I know my boyfriend and I were laughing about your latest entrepreneur video, but JP on YouTube has accumulated over 100 million views and is the upcoming author of the book, How to Be Ultra Spiritual. So that book's coming out March 7th, and it's actually available for pre-order. We'll get into that a little bit later, but JP, welcome to the show. Fill in any gaps I might have left out and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
Yeah, well, Jules, one, thank you for being weird enough to have me on the show. I so appreciate you. Appreciate you having me, and I'm already having fun with you before we've even started. So the other thing that you didn't mention about me, and I have to say I'm offended, you didn't tell people that I have beautiful blue eyes and that I'm dramatically handsome. It's almost a medical condition I have. I'm so handsome. And apparently I'm narcissistic too. We should probably tell people that. So, and then a glimpse into my personal life. Yeah, well, I would dare say I'm blessed that the work that I do is, you know, which I think the heart and soul of the work I do is helping people help themselves live more meaningful lives, let go of what doesn't serve them, and help them step into their personal power, whether that's done through comedy videos, coaching, books, live events. That's important to me. So because that work is just so near and dear to me, it's hard for me to know where my personal life begins and ends and where my work begins and ends, because I don't think there is division. It's just like a spectrum, if you will. So my personal life involves a lot of work, which ironically, the work doesn't really feel like work. I mean, when there's a bunch of appointments on the schedule, it's like, okay, the commitment of the be here at this time or whatever, that sort of feels like work, but what I actually do feels like a lot of play. So in other words, I play/work a lot. Oftentimes it's sort of like from the time I wake up to the time I go to bed, not all the time, but a lot of the time. So my personal life is me doing a lot of my work. And and just one other thing I'll add to that. I've been single for the past year. Was in a relationship for about 2.5 years, ended February 2016. And I'm just now, becoming connected with a woman. We're forming a beautiful relationship. And that is... It matters a lot to me, and it surprises me that's coming into my personal life now. It's such a welcome surprise, but I had been married to just my work for so long, and especially the year after I broke up with my past girlfriend. I just thought, well, I'm in a monogamous relationship with my work, and it's been such a blessing and also an enhancement to my work to have this kind of new dimension of my personal life, which is the relationship, come on board.
Yeah. I love that. I think, you know, the healthy disruption, if you will, or enhancement is another way to say it. But I think we often, you know, especially young conventional life listeners, it feels like life has to either be this like either or thing. Like I can either have this epic relationship or an epic business, but not both. And so I'm curious, like, how is it blending those two worlds? And I imagine she's got to be a pretty rock star lady to be able to get the world of who you are.
And what well, she is very epic herself. And I think something that I'm discovering is very important to me. In fact, I think necessary in a relationship in order for it to be compatible, for me to stay in my power, is she needs to be really calibrated into her purpose in life. And this beautiful woman absolutely is. So in some of my past relationships, because I feel very blessed that I'm very connected to my purpose, serving my purpose and expressing my purpose. Not to say that I don't have more room to grow and learn and become more intimate with my purpose. Of course I do. But I'm still pretty connected to it as is. So past relationships, the lady has almost looked at my work like the other woman and like gotten quite jealous and had a lot of like sense of insignificance come up in her compared to how much I would work. And I'll raise my hand and like, I probably was dysfunctional in the sense of like not attending to the relationship as much as I otherwise could have. But at the same time, what I've learned is I am not compatible in an intimate relationship with a woman who isn't very purpose-centered. Otherwise, it's just if she needs me to be her source of significance, then I'll tell you right now, I'm going to fail at that. I'm going to let her down, because if she starts to compare herself to my work and needs me to constantly reassure her through, you know, spending, you know, all day, every day with her that she's significant, well, that's not something I can offer while staying true to my work. So yeah, and I love your observation how a lot of us have this thing, well, it has to be one or the other. I can have a great relationship or I can have a great work life, but I can't have both. And I think we need to call bull crap on ourselves. We can have both if it's with the right, if we're in the right relationship with the right person and with the right work.
Mm-hmm.
We can have both. And I think that's way easier said than done. I mean, it's just like, as easy as grabbing a bottle of water off the table. It's like, well, just get that. Get the right work, get the right relationship. Man, it's a struggle at best to find. I mean, I would say to be in the what I think is a beautiful place that I'm at right now with all that, it's taken me 15 years into my career to find. Not to be pessimistic and be like, well, if you guys are in year two of your career, enjoy the next 13 years of disconnected hell.
Totally. Yeah. I'm curious for those listening, because I think a lot of people can identify with this. Is there a shortcut, you know, with what you've been doing in your own life to kind of harmonize or be in the balance of the two? Or is there a practice or just something tangible that you might be able to offer for our listeners that has worked for you with that?
Well, I think one of the shortcuts is learning from our pain, from our mistakes, and it's becoming very cognizant with what doesn't work for me. I think a lot of times, you know, the what doesn't work for us ultimately is what causes us pain, whether it's in our work or our relationships or both. And in those painful experiences of what doesn't work for us, I think are the greatest teachers. And when we don't pay attention to it, the teacher has to keep teaching. And it'll keep teaching from the doctrine of what doesn't work for us. Well, so we'll keep re-experiencing what doesn't work for us, and we'll accumulate more pain and suffering because we're not in a state of learning from this teacher that's just a blessing. It's just teaching us what we need to be taught. So the more we learn what doesn't work for me, what doesn't work? How have I given myself away in relationships? What doesn't work for me in work? What doesn't work for me in the blend of the two? pay attention to that. Those are valuable life lessons. I'm a big fan of believing we don't know who the hell we are until we know who we're not. We don't know what works for us until we know what doesn't. I think the what doesn't work for us, those are like little points of reference that help us recalibrate our direction so we realize, oh, this doesn't work for me. It doesn't mean we all of a sudden know what does work, but it means this direction doesn't work. So I'm going to readjust psychologically. And it's like navigating a dark forest. You know, we're blind to the surroundings, but we bump into a tree and it's like, oh, that doesn't work. I'll kind of shift directions by 35 degrees. Paying attention to what doesn't work is, in my opinion, a life hack.
Would you like to take your business to the next level? This May, join us and 50 entrepreneurs in Petrotulli, Italy for a 5-day business accelerator designed to uplevel every area of your life. We have rented out an entire town and castle. Get all of the details at unconventionallifeshow.com/Italy. And now back to the show.
Yeah, nice. So good. I'm appreciating how we've started this conversation kind of in this like softer element of relationships. And I think most people, you know, see you on the other side of the camera, whether it's, you know, taking a crack at entrepreneurship or consciousness or health or yogis or whatever through your videos. Kind of surprised you don't identify with yourself as a true comedian based on some of these videos. But I mean, who you are now in the world of how most people get to see you, at least in terms of the public way. Like, if we turn back the time a little bit and we're a fly on the wall into your younger years, like who would JP have been? Who would we have seen in middle school or high school or growing up? Like what was that like?
Yeah, there were, I think, different versions of me. It's pretty interesting. Whenever I would, like my first year in middle school, like when I went, it was middle school was 7th and 8th grade. I think nowadays like 6th grades. So when I was in middle school, my first year, I became a quiet introvert. And I didn't know it at the time, but now looking back, I can say, yeah, the reason why that was is I was so intimidated by the older guys. And physically, maybe a little bit, but more so emotionally, like just terrified of rejection. And then when I was in 8th grade, so I'm, you know, in the upper class in middle school, I was so outgoing, you know, just one of the more popular kids in school. Then into the first year of high school, back to the shy introvert, just walking around essentially in a state of terror of being rejected. And of course, when there's older guys around, I was just projecting my, you know, inner father figure onto them. And I'm, you know, really just like afraid of how I've felt rejected in the past from my father. And I'm afraid I'll re-experience it with these guys. But then when I got into being a junior and senior in high school, and I'm now in the older spectrum, and therefore don't have a lot of older guys in the school to project my father issues, I feel safer and I become more outgoing. And so in the middle school especially, sports were a huge part of my life. I was never the star athlete. That was always Kurt Hartman. He was a good friend of mine. But I was always one of the top couple, top three athletes on whatever the team was, football, basketball, track and field. And that was important to me. One, I mean, so many life lessons that are embedded through sports for a young person, but also it's how I created a sense of significance for myself. Because as a young person, I didn't know it at the time, but as a young person looking back, I can realize I carried around a lot of painful insignificance inside, just believing like, I'm not good enough the way I am, you know, feel pretty insignificant. And I didn't know how to be vulnerable. So I didn't know how to actually just feel that and process it and digest it. So I would compensate for it in sports. You know, being a star athlete makes me feel significant for 5 minutes at a time, which was a good escape from this, like just subtle yet persistent real feeling of insignificance that I had inside.
Go ahead.
And I was just going to add to that, being a comedian in school was also part of how I got a sense of significance. Making people laugh made me feel like I mattered to them because, look, I just made them laugh. They value me. So I got to feel significant by making people laugh. So that's part of what helped me train myself to read people. So being able to sit down, you know, in the high school cafeteria with a group of people and just read people, and within 2 seconds have a very good, basically intuitive understanding, what do I need to do or say to make this person laugh so that I can feel like they like me, so that I can feel significant, so I don't have to feel how I actually feel at the core emotions inside of myself,
yeah,
which would be insignificant.
Yeah, I appreciate that you're touching on this, because I think this is something a lot of our listeners can identify with. And I know when I look at my own life, it's like looking at those moments, whether for me, it's mostly been not good enough or not worth it. So then I develop like all these patterns and ways of being to like compensate. And then, you know, it is, it's like you don't truly feel the thing underneath it. And so for those hearing this that might not be so familiar, and I imagine at the time as like a high schooler, you weren't like, I'm doing this because I'm compensating for that. It's like totally the
unknown. No, it's like, I'm doing this because I'm awesome.
Exactly. Like I'm freaking funny, or I'm, you know, I'm this, I'm that. And for those hearing this, like, what advice might you give them on how they can start to map some of this patterning that might be happening on a unconscious level or a slightly semi-conscious level? How might they start to bring that into the consciousness?
Well, I think a first part of it is embracing the idea that it's okay to be insecure. It's okay to not feel okay. And part of that, in my opinion, would be all people are insecure, period. So if we can embrace, like, I have my insecurities and it's actually okay. Those insecurities, they'll work for me if I embrace them. They'll work against me if I try to avoid them. I think so. First and foremost, we have to be willing to embrace that insecurity is part of our nature. And then once we can sort of accept that, I think step number two for this alleged advice that I'm giving would be to ask ourselves, what of my behaviors are insecurity driven? And the question isn't, do I have behaviors that are insecurity driven? No, we're just going to pretend like we're all humans here. Like, welcome to the club. You're part of the human condition. So what of my behaviors? What do I do that's insecurity driven? And what do I not do that's insecurity driven? What do I avoid? And we have to be careful to analyze that with essentially the heart of understanding, not analyzing it for the purpose of shaming ourselves, like, what a jerk I am for doing this. I go out with friends just to make them laugh because I'm insecure inside and that drives me to do that. No, we're not looking to shame ourselves over it. Otherwise, we're just hurting the hurt parts of us. We're making the insecure parts of us more insecure because we're just shaming them once we discover them. So Ram Dass has said, you can't get out of a jail that you don't know you're in. And I think a lot of us are in the jail of our insecurities and have no idea. So I think the more we can realize what our insecurities are, the more we can actually grow beyond them and live with them rather than being limited by them. So that's why I personally put a lot of value in becoming aware of what are my insecurity driven behaviors and avoidances in life, very much so in both personal and work life. I would highly encourage everybody to consider what your insecurity driven behaviors are. And again, not for the purpose of shaming ourselves for them, but for the purpose of compassionate self-awareness so that we can realize the jails that we impose on ourselves.
Yeah, Awesome. Such good advice. I get curious about the path of like high school to now and in some ways imagining like what kind of work and evolution it looked like for you on that path. And then on the other side, at what point did the word entrepreneurship start to make its way into your life? And then kind of imagining the two like did their own dance, you growing personally along with the entrepreneurship. So can you share a little bit about that evolution or the merging of those two worlds?
Sure. So out of high school, I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do in life. Yet my parents and their advice, and it kind of made sense to me, was you don't need to know what you want to do, just go to college. So I enrolled in the local university, Bowling Green State University. I was born and raised in Northwest Ohio. And just taking the really useless classes that you have to take in order to like graduate anyway, like learning about things that I will never use. And I find at the time I thought it was a curse, but now I look back and say, well, that was a blessing. I have the ability to have an inability to learn about things that I don't feel purposeful about. So I just couldn't learn about this useless mathematics and geology garbage. It's garbage for me. It's treasure for other people. Garbage to me, though. I just shut down. And it scared me. So I lasted in college several months and then I just dropped out. And right around that time, I started to get really enthused about holistic health and exercise. There was a trainer at the local gym that I was working out at. She said, oh, JP, I've watched these videotapes. Oh, I'm a little old. From the Czech Institute's Holistic Exercise Institute in Southern California. So I watched those and they really intrigued me. It's like, as much as I have the ability to have an inability to learn about things I don't feel purposeful about, when I start feeling purposeful about something, freaking watch out. And this was the first, the holistic health education that I started to get exposed to. That was the first time I ever felt passionate about learning anything. And I just took off with it. So I enrolled in all their courses, which are done via come out and you do a 5-day course at a time and then study correspondence videos. And got into a lot in exercise, which then led me to be very passionate about nutrition, which then led me to be very passionate about stress reduction, which then led me to be very passionate about just straight on like emotional healing, matters of the human heart. So it was like a gluten-free breadcrumb trail that got me from exercise, which I could relate to as a teenager, to emotional healing. It's like, wow, that's 18-year-old JP would say emotional healing is a bunch of garbage. Like only weak people need emotional healing. Strong people have no emotions. That was the mindset I had for a lot of my life. So I became very passionate about those realms and ended up when I was 23 moving from Ohio out to California. The institute that I had been studying with really took a liking to me, wanted me to start my practice there in their facility, as well as start training to teach their courses, which I did, and was a faculty member with them for 7 years, in addition to developing and teaching my own courses, developing my client practice. So I had the pleasure of flying all over the world and getting to work with and teach a lot of people concepts in holistic health and emotional healing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when we look at where you are now, which, I know you have Awaken with JP, which is like a lot of your brand and the practice, and imagine you still have some clients and stuff that you work with. But I think a lot of us know you through the videos and through storytelling. And at what point did that start to make its way into your life? And the first time you did one of those, like, what was that even like? Like, I imagine it was probably just throwing a dart and you're like, I kind of want to do this and give this a go. And then maybe it stuck or maybe it totally flopped, but tell us about that.
Yeah, so I started my YouTube channel about 4 years ago. And for the first year and a half, maybe a little more than that, I only did sincere life advice videos on my YouTube channel. In fact, there's, I think, over 150 of them on my channel. And then, you know, the comedy videos, I think I have maybe 55 or so comedy videos on my channel. So there's just far more of the sincere life advice ones. But then, yeah, you know, I had told myself a story that it would be bad for business to let my sense of humor out on video, or, you know, it all kind of like in the professional setting. And yeah, and I believed that story. I believed it for long enough, apparently long enough, that now I was willing to betray that story because I was tired of betraying myself and restricting my very natural comedic sense of humor, not letting that be a part of my life. So, you know, I had the idea for my first comedy video, and it's like, all right, this probably isn't a good idea, but I'm going to do it. And at the time, I thought it was just a one-time deal. But I did it, and it was very creatively satisfying. And so I guess this is just a little over 2 years ago at this point. So yeah, so much inner fulfillment, and I never identified with any kind of creativity until I started the comedy videos. It's like, okay, wow, the videos can become my paintbrush or my canvas that I paint on. And it was probably 2 or 3 weeks after I published the first comedy video, which was called How to Be Ultra Spiritual. And it dawned on me, like, wow, I could probably do more of these. And I want to do more of these. And they're, and the bonus is they're, this video is getting a nice response, and it's not only not bad for business, but it looks like it's actually good for business. And I think what that taught me is, at least from my delusional point of view, it taught me you always win when you're yourself. You can't lose. You can be afraid you'll lose. You can have things that don't go the way you think they should, but you will always win when you were true to yourself. And it also taught me to have my beliefs, but don't believe my beliefs. It's like, yeah, I don't believe everything I think. I think doing comedy stuff will be bad for business. And it turns out my sense of certainty around that was just correlated to falseness. It had no correlation to truth.
Yeah, and here you are, over 100 million views later on the videos, which is crazy. I love how it was the part that you, I don't know if denying fits, but it's like you looking at your life before you released the first one, and the practice was in order, and all of these things were in order, yet there was this one part of yourself that didn't have the space or the airtime, the comedic part, to really come out. And it's like, yeah. Should I let it out? Should I let it out? Life is already pretty good, but I'm missing this thing. Should I let it out? And then you let it out, and that actually becomes like the thing that creates the space for everything else. And so
yeah.
I think so many of us hearing this, we do this in our lives all the time. It's like that one part of ourself that we don't want to show people. And there's fear naturally. And like, I'm curious for anyone that's on the fence right now that has something inside of them that they're like, if I could just give it a little bit of airtime, like how they might be able to just, yeah, push them over the edge a little bit to give you that permission.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of wisdom in intentionally making ourselves uncomfortable because it courage, I think, is a muscle. And to me, courage isn't being fearless. If we're fearless, it means we're not in a courageous state. We're doing something that's easy for us. But to me, courage is we're doing something that scares us, but we're doing it anyway. We're not being afraid to feel the fear. We're doing it anyway. So I think doing something every day to make ourselves uncomfortable physically and or psychologically, preferably a little bit of both, helps train the muscle of our courage. And I'm also a big fan of asking people, what's the worst that you think might happen, and letting your imagination run wild. Imagination and our fears, rarely have a correlation to reality, but they have a correlation to the stories we make up. And then we get afraid of not what will happen, but we get afraid of what we think might happen. So instead of trying to avoid what we think might happen, I like to invite people to embrace it. So what do you think is the worst possible scenario if you let this new part of you out, or this old part of you, been there all along, but if you let it have a new expression, what's the worst thing that you think might happen? And then a lot of us, well, people might not like me, my boyfriend, girlfriend might leave me, society might reject me. It's like, good. How do you think that would feel? If that happens, how do you think that would feel? Oh, it'd be awful. Good. Feel the awfulness. So deliberately hugging the feelings that we're so afraid of, rather than posturing ourselves trying to avoid them. So we're trying to go directly up to the scary monster that we're otherwise trying to avoid, embracing it like it's a friend rather than avoiding it and fighting it like it's an enemy. What's the worst possible scenario you can imagine? Cool. How would you feel? Terrible, awful, shameful, afraid, angry? Yep. Now feel those feelings right now rather than avoiding those feelings. So I apologize. You're probably hearing some doors around me. It's just my
adding
mind.
Adding the emphasis, yeah.
Or maybe it's my mind closing. But to me, man, we got to connect with that. And then one other thing. I mean, that what I just rambled about there, that's not to be deluded by what I'm about to say. What I'm about to say is sort of like phase two of the exercise. And it is this question: if you never let this part of you out, what will it cost you? And exaggerate it. I mean, don't play it delicate. Don't try to be accurate. Let your imagination run wild on this too. What would it cost you? So if I imagine, let's just imagine that I never let my comedic self out. And I'm sitting here saying, what would it cost me if I lived my whole life not letting this part of me shine, not letting this part of me be funny on camera? I'm guessing I would start to resent the hell out of everybody around me, because I'd be resenting myself. And I'd start to treat everybody else the way I felt about myself. Probably because I can't own it. I project it onto other people. So I would guess if I never let this part of me out, my comedic part, I'd resent myself so much that I'd start to resent everybody else. And it would be impossible for me to have a stable relationship, because I would just resent the woman for things she's never done. I'd be resenting her for things about me. And I would guess that I would die a relatively lonely, angry, uncomfortable person. I'd probably develop some sort of addictions. I don't know what they would be, hopefully mild, but some form of addictions to medicate the sense of emptiness and hollowness that I'm not filling up from the creativity, from my comedic expression, that is very much an internal source of fulfillment, not outer. So I'm guessing I would use addictions to try to relentlessly fill up what could never be filled up from the outside, thus an addiction. It doesn't work. That's why we keep using it. So I'm guessing life would look pretty terrible for me. And I think that's important for me to get in touch with, because pain is a good motivator. It really is. And if we can go to that place of pain in our future, how terrible basically would your life be if you didn't let this part of you out? So we can experience that pain here through the power of our imagination, rather than necessarily needing to experience that pain through chronological reality. So if I can imagine myself, you know, 10 years down the track, disgruntled, angry, nobody likes me, and I sure as heck don't like anybody because I don't like myself. If I can imagine that now, then I don't necessarily have to live that pain in 10 years in order to teach me. Hopefully I can teach myself now by intelligently going there, warping this illusion called time, going there in my mind right now.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, such good advice. So I have a few questions for you around your process, specifically around the comedy. Because I think, you know, there's so many of us, you know, I was talking to Taryn Southern, which Jeanette, another YouTuber, she got into the game early. And anyway, she's like, don't go into YouTube now. It's like not worthwhile. Like, you're not going to make it. Stop trying. And I think that, you know, obviously there's been a lot of momentum on your videos. And I'm curious about the process. Like, you seem, from the outside perspective or my perspective, you seem to kind of target a group of people, whether the latest one, it was entrepreneurs. There's some kind of script, whether it's spontaneous or maybe it's pre-rehearsed. And it's loaded with comedy and these like little innuendos and puns and things like that. But I'm wondering what does actually go into it, and how do you take this comedy, this natural expression of yours, and then what does your creative process look like when I'm getting it out there?
Yeah, well, the beginning part of the creative process is coming up with the big picture of the video ideas, like, oh, how to be an entrepreneur. Those come to me in just sort of like obscure moments. Typically when I'm not trying to be creative is when those creative inspirations come to me. So it might be I'm sitting on an airplane, or I'm mowing the lawn, walking my dog, making coffee. So ideas come to me and I just write them down. And then to fill in the little picture, like the details, the concepts in the big macro idea, usually the first hour of my workday is dedicated to creative time. And that's oftentimes developing like, okay, how to be an entrepreneur. Where are the idiosyncrasy nuances within the realm of entrepreneurship that we all do? Well, we don't talk about them. Therefore, you know, showing something that's everybody knows about, but nobody talks about, that's part of comedy. That's part of how to get laughs. So what are those things? So I'll do creative work on that, usually the first hour of my day. And yeah, the comedy videos, for the most part, they're scripted and rehearsed. I have just learned I enjoy, as a dimension of the creativity, the writing aspect of it. So, and I'll have, you know, my lines rehearsed so that when I'm on camera, essentially 90% of everything is taken care of. So that gives me the freedom once the camera's out to sort of like wiggle my way into the feelings and the body tonality that just, I don't know, feels right to me. But because I don't have to think about anything else, I can sort of get into those more subtle realms of, you know, the feelings, the facial expressions. And I personally really, really enjoy that. So once I film the video, I edit the video and release it.
Yeah, awesome. Does it feel pretty effortless? Like, does the word flow kind of fit while you're actually on camera and it's happening? Does it, like, when I imagine, like, I used to be a sponsored snowboarder for a while and I go down the mountain and it's like nothing else is in the mind when you're doing it because you're just so in the zone. And so I'm curious if that fits to a degree for your
own. Yeah, it absolutely does. I certainly identify with being in the flow, being in a flow state. And I think sometimes the evidence that I have that I'm in a flow state is when, like, there's this feeling of grace. And I know that's a very abstract term, like, well, what does that actually mean? It's like, oh, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like a feeling I call grace. And then there's like this timelessness where I might be writing or I might be on camera. It's like, wow, 3 hours went by? How could that be? So I found like I don't like the time constraints, especially when I'm on camera. If I have, you know, I'll probably only need, say, an hour to do a video. But if I know I only have 2 hours before our next appointment, then I'm like, I want to see if I can schedule that later so I don't have this time constraint, because I like to be able to flow. And it's interesting because to me, tapping into your inner genius, my inner genius, yes, that the flow state is like, yes, things come easy, but at the same time, it's hard work in the sense of there's a lot of hours put in. There's a lot of mental focus. So it's not, you know, it being easy to me has nothing to do with like, We're being lazy, no energy output, or just indifferent. It's like, no, it's we're so highly engaged. That could be looked at as like the hard work part, but being so highly engaged and present is what creates the easy flow of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, nice. What would you say has been your ninja skill or ninja edge to the success that you've had? If you could kind of pinpoint it or break it down, like what do you think has been like the meat ingredient, if you will?
I think it's showing people things that are there that they don't see. And I think that can be show like the entrepreneur video, showing entrepreneurs things that you are probably there inside of you, behaviors you have, thoughts you have that are there, but you don't see them. So I think when we see something about ourselves that we haven't seen before, one, that's self-awareness, and two, it creates confusion. And laughter is a reaction to confusion. I mean, the ingredient to make someone laugh is you got to confuse them. That and it might be oversimplified, but it might be appropriately simplified. So showing people what's inside of them that they didn't know was there, I think is my ninja skill.
Yeah, nice. Last question for you before we move into the rapid fire round. And this comes around like impact and purpose. And I think as millennials, it's this big thing of like, which impact am I making and how am I serving the greater collective good? And I think that's all important and great. And there's like this other, you know, kind of comedic side of it. But I'm curious if we look at you like JP Sears, the stuff you're doing, whether it's the videos or the book or any of it, like, what is it that you're really out to serve or out to do by being here? Like, what are you, really standing for?
Well, a couple of things. I want to get more in touch with me, and I want to get more in touch with my inner self. I want to grow. I want to heal. I want to better fulfill my life purpose. So there's that selfish agenda, certainly. And then externally, the impact that I want to make, and I hope I am, and I hope it gets bigger, is helping people help themselves to find more meaning in their life, period. And I could expand and say like, meaning can mean healing, growth, connecting to purpose, but having more meaning in life. I think there's a lot of meaning already in our lives, but we may not be aware of it. So, when we're in a place where we don't feel much meaning in our life, it doesn't feel like a life worth living. So we start to actually disconnect from our life and not live our life. We might be living someone else's agenda. We might just be in a perpetual place of self-medicating, dissociating from ourselves. So not even living our life, even though we might still be alive. So to me, the purpose of the miracle of your being is to live your freaking life. And it takes a lot of courage to live our freaking life. There's so much risk there because people will validate us when we are the person that they want us to be. People don't validate us when we are being ourselves. That's something only we can do for ourselves, validating ourselves for us being ourselves. And we're not going to have this mystical, subtle, intangible, yet powerful sense of meaning in our life unless we are being ourselves.
Yeah, good. I'm excited to show. We were talking earlier. My sister's a big fan of JP, and so I'm excited for her to listen to this when we're done. So good. All right, rapid fire round, series of random questions. For those listening, JP is going to share just after this round about his upcoming book and how to win a copy of that as part of our giveaway. Series of random questions. Are you ready?
Now I am.
All right. Question number one. Fill in the blank. If you really knew me, you would know what?
I love that. That I'm scared.
All right, next question. What is one practice that you do daily that you feel sets you up for success?
Gratitude journaling.
Can you share about that real quick, like what that is for you?
Yeah, it's a process I learned actually from Tony Robbins. He's someone whom I've had the benefit of being connected to. He invited me to his Unleash the Power Within event. Man, so powerful. But anyway, during that, he taught his version of gratitude journaling. And I'm going to test drive this for at least a week. And I've been doing it now for 8 months because it just felt like a real upgrade for me. And doing it early in the day, just like our childhood, what happens in our childhood can influence the rest of our life. And I think the morning is the childhood of our day. What we do in the morning can have a dramatic influence over us for the rest of our day. So what it looks like for me is I write down three things that I'm grateful for. Most recently it was, I'm grateful for Karen, who's my executive assistant. There's so much going on lately. Oh, so grateful that she's helping and supporting me. Grateful for Amber, this beautiful woman who I'm in a new relationship with. And what the hell was number three? I think waking up in a safe hotel room was like very simple, but I'm very grateful for that. So listing those three things out, and then for each of them, taking a minute and feeling the feelings of gratitude. So it doesn't just stop at the mental concept. Here's what I'm grateful for. That's pretty worthless in and of itself, but feeling the feelings of gratitude, our power is in our feeling. It's not in our thinking. We can think I'm grateful, but if we step into our feeling of gratitude and deliberately feel the sensations of the gratitude, that's us starting our day, in my opinion, very engaged with a endogenous source of our own power, in my opinion. So that's the gratitude practice.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for that. All right, next question. If you could turn back the time and stare at your 20-year-old self, look him in the eye, give him a piece of advice, what would you say to him that you know?
Yeah, I would tell him you're not supposed to know. You're not supposed to have it figured out. So breathe deeper. You're not supposed to know how to be successful. You're not supposed to know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah, awesome. All right, next question. Most people hear, think, and want this thing called alignment. How to live my life in alignment. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I say amen. And I would also say what alignment means to me is being true to ourself. And I think there's so much quality added to our life when we're willing to be unapologetically true to our weird self. And when I say true to ourself, I'm really talking about our heart. I'm not talking about our mind. I like to ask people, what do you want in life? And it's really asking your mind, what do you want? Like, who do you want to be? And please ignore that. I think the purpose of our life isn't to be who we think we are, nor is it to be who we want to be. It's to be who we actually are. So when I say ourself, it's not who you want to be or even who you think you are. It's who you actually are. And I think that comes from our heart. So being true to our heart, which means I think we have to be true to our feelings because the feelings are the language of our heart. Thoughts, words, that's the language of our head. Yeah, I'm glad it's there, but I don't want to be a slave to that. I want to be in service to the master of my heart.
Yeah, love it. Last question. What does living an unconventional life mean to you?
Honestly, following my heart, not following a premeditated path that I had mapped out or my parents or society. Go to college, get the normal 9-to-5. If that's what my heart said, then that would be my unconventional life. It's me being true to my heart, but that's not what my heart has led me to do. So, you know, being the blind man or woman, wandering around in life, our eyes closed so that we can see clearly where we're going because we're navigating by our heart, not our eyes. And I think that can lead us to what some would call an unconventional life, but truly we're breaking normal via being our unapologetic weird self. And I think that's a beautiful unconventional life.
Yeah, so good. And JP Sears, everyone, Unconventional Life family. JP, tell us about the book that is available pre-order right now, coming out March 7th. One of our lucky entrepreneurs can win it.
Well, thank you. I put my heart and soul into the book. It was a very significant well of creativity that I jumped into to write the book, far different well than what goes into writing videos. And the book, it's a comedy book. It's called How to Be Ultra Spiritual, 12 and a half Steps to Spiritual Superiority.
And 12 steps.
So it's written completely in character, you know, my headband character that I am in videos. And so there's laughs, entertainment, and I think maybe as significantly, maybe more, there's deeper messages embedded in the language of humor. There are messages that where I want to encourage the reader to let go of that which served you, that no longer serves you, and messages encouraging readers to be more connected and true to yourself. So I find that humor is a language that I enjoy, and I think it's an effective language of me conveying my perspectives. So that's what the book is all about. So yeah, I'm pumped for it. It's available for pre-order right now. It's coming out and officially released in less than a month.
So good. And where can our listeners check out the book? How can they grab a copy of it?
Yeah, well, anywhere online. There's also a straight up page dedicated to it. howtobeultraspiritual.com is a place you can go for it.
So good. And for one of our listeners, you guys can head over to unconventionallifeshow.com right now. We've got information on how to win that copy. And JP, for those that want to listen to the videos, learn more about what you're up to, check out Awaken with JP, where should they go for that?
Yeah, all my social media handles are Awaken with JP. So that's the best place to find me or avoid me if you find me offensive.
So awesome. JP, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with all of our Unconventional Life family. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. Another great episode. We will talk to you next time.